You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Wednesday, so it's time for Wayne on Wednesday with Wayne McCurry. Wayne is a portfolio manager at FNB Wealth and Investment in Johannesburg. Wayne, we haven't spoken for 2 weeks, and suddenly the world's changed. You know, you and I were sort of very confidently talking about interest rates cuts maybe in March, and then we said, no, it'll be in June. Now they're saying maybe no cuts this year because of data and inflation being too persistently stubborn in the United States of America, and markets don't like it, Wayne.
No, markets definitely don't like it. But, I mean, it's even more, even shorter time period than 2 weeks. Last Friday, the mining shares shot the lights out. I mean, Impala was up 10%.
Yes, I remember.
It was up 6%. And then all of a sudden, a little bit of weakness on Monday. And then the data, the U.S. economic data comes out yesterday, and the shares got hammered. But they've recovered quite a bit today, but they haven't recovered everything. But they certainly have recovered today. But yes, this is all driven by one set of data coming out. Now, you never know next week. Some other data might come out that shows inflation might not be this persistent, and the markets will go up like crazy. So we're in this transition phase where everyone knows interest rates will be cut, but we don't know when. So whenever data comes out, either way, the market's either up or down quite strongly on that. But the overall trend is still intact. Interest rates are going to be cut. You know, so you know, this is all relatively short-term stuff. So on a 2 to 3 year view, interest rates will be lower and mining shares most likely will be up and the rand most likely will be stronger. And I suppose maybe that's what you've got to focus on, is the medium term, and then just ride out the shorter term noise, the ups and downs in the shorter term. But of course, you know, a whole bunch of factors, negative factors that come together. I've spoken about the U.S. economy showing that it's going to grow quite strongly this year, 2.5%. The Middle East story doesn't help share markets either.
Really bad. Yeah.
Although we can come back to that, because it hasn't had as much of an effect as what I thought it possibly would. But then also we've had Chinese data came out about their GDP that was actually quite good, but. Yeah, there's been a whole lot of sort of negative factors that have all sort of come together, making the outlook for interest rates seem a little worse.
Yeah,
over the last little while.
Yeah, it is. The United States is obviously the world's biggest economy and therefore the most important inflation data that comes out.
Yeah.
And it was slightly higher than it should have been. And economic growth is slightly better and jobs are still being created. So why cut rates? But on the other hand, as you quite rightly say, even though some people, Wayne, are saying we might need an interim interest rate rise in the United States, I don't believe that. The fact is, though, that the futures markets and the bond markets and forward rate agreements and all sorts of other fancy things are telling us that November is penciled in now by market participants.
Yeah.
And whereas before, it was almost certain to be March. And the market got ahead of itself,
so
let's face it. Yeah.
You know, that you can change as new data comes to light.
Mm.
I mean, we spoke about this previously.
Yes.
But when we look at U.S. inflation in particular, the last data that came out, the month-on-month increase, 60% of that is termed shelter, which essentially boils down to your long bond rate.
Yeah.
Now, the long bond rates now, which is the other negative factor weighing on the markets, that I forgot to mention early on. The 10 years at 4.7, that's quite high. Eh?
It
but
is.
But just to come back to inflation, you measuring off a base a year ago at 3.6. Now, in 4 months' time, 5 months' time, something like that, you're measuring against a base of 4.5. So in other words, that shelter component of inflation is going to come down quite dramatically. And that was 60% of the month-on-month increase. So, you know, it's not as though inflation is going to sit at these current levels just into perpetuity. It will more than likely still come down. But, I mean, that's all dependent. And as you've said many times before, everything here is data dependent.
Yeah.
The whole market will turn on it. You know, it'll turn 180 degrees if the next labor inflation data, what everything, is better than expectations. Or it'll just collapse on its bum if it's worse than expectations. So everyone is data dependent.
Yes, and indeed in South Africa is as well. We are dependent, our bond market is dependent on the US market plus local factors tagging along. And the South African 10-year bond is now 11%. It's yielding 11%. I mean, it's 10.99, but I'm calling it 11%. Retail sales in South Africa came out today, I think it was, 0.8% year on year. South African inflation slightly weaker than last month, but there's no justification for rates to come in down in South Africa either, Wayne.
And we, even if tomorrow, next month, our inflation number comes out at 4.5%, we will not cut before the US cuts.
Exactly.
There'll be a very negative effect on our currency. So even if our rate hits the Reserve Bank's targets of 4.5%, they're not cutting until the US cuts. Look, it's unlikely to happen, by the way, because we're all in a global village and inflation is all more or less the same, shows the same trends worldwide. So our inflation is not going to fall on its own unless the US inflation falls. But we won't cut rates until the US cuts rates.
I spoke to a very clever fellow in London yesterday who runs a massive multi-asset income desk in London, as I say. And he said that the S&P, I look at the S&P now, and let's call it 5,100, the futures market, that is. And the high earlier this year was 5,333.5 for the futures market as well. So suddenly we've lost 240 points, say, on the S&P. And he said we might need to get some more out because the market that we've been talking about, the expectation market of market participants, was far too exuberant. And so we might need to come down a bit more. Do you agree with that?
It's quite possible, but it's not going to be a collapse. You're not going to get a bear market. You know, 5%, 10%, 15%, even a 20% move can literally happen for no real fundamental change in the economy and the markets. So, yeah, that could very easily happen, and the NASDAQ could also come down. I mean, I know the NASDAQ is off its high for the year as well. I just don't know by how much. But, yeah, that could all happen.
And nothing
would change.
No, it's strange because I don't know all the Fed governors, but the San Francisco Fed is chaired by a woman by the name of Mary Daly, and she came out with a speech, I think it was yesterday, could have been the day before, but anyway, she said, no need to cut rates at the moment, no justification to cut rates, and that really put the nail in the coffin of the short-term traders. And what worries me, when I look at my screen, I sometimes think about you, and I see Impala Platinum last Friday up 10%, and then I think it was Monday or Tuesday, down 10% again, and today up 9% a day. This is skin of your teeth stuff here. I mean, you're holding on. Your knuckles must be white hanging on here.
Yes and no, skin of your teeth stuff. Look, I don't follow Impala all that well. I follow Amplats well.
Yeah,
you know, the share price for a while now has been sitting around, call it 650 and 850, just as very broad parameters.
Right.
In the bigger scheme of things, if there's a commodity upcycle, this doesn't even matter because the share price is probably going 1,500, 2,000 level if there's a commodity upcycle. So whether it's up 10%, you know, in the 700s or the 800s or the 600s, actually, it doesn't matter. It's just short-term noise, essentially. If I'm right about the commodity cycle, the upside is significantly higher. So it doesn't matter if it's up 6% the one day and down 6% the next day. You know, on the 2 to 3 year view, I think there's still significant upside from shares. And Sasol's the same. I mean, Sasol has been beaten to death. It has come up a little bit on the last couple of days, last little while. But, you know, global chemical prices, which is half of Sasol, they should recover in a commodity upcycle. Oil should recover in a commodity upcycle. So these commodities are essentially almost bottom feeding now, you know, with all the, and it's also very typical of a change in cycle that the bulls and the bears beat each other up so badly, you know, up and down 10% in a day. And this is not a Mickey Mouse company. You know, that's, that tells you there's some very definitive positive and negative views around that the one day people are prepared to push the price up 10%, then the very literally 2 days later, prepared to push the price down 10%.
An old boss of mine used to say, Lindsay, when you get extreme volatility in a market which is either quite elevated or quite beaten up, that usually means a change of trend because people don't know quite what to do. And so we could be, I don't know, if you look at the big long-term chart, then you'd say, well, we're at the bottom of the resources cycle when it comes to share prices.
Definitely. And I mean, we do a thing each week internally. We look at the whole share market. It's very representative of the market, and we put in our estimates of earnings and price earnings ratios and dividends and all of these things.
Yes.
And we come to a theoretical 1 and 2 year outlook for share price returns. And on our market, those numbers are astonishingly large. Eh?
I saw a tweet of yours about the banking stocks, and I can't remember what it's an X now. It's
no, not a
tweet.
And
it said they're getting smashed in that you get a dividend yield of 7%, and you went on. And it's almost as though it was a cry for help to say, for goodness sake, open your eyes, investors. These things are well run and they're cheap.
Yeah, and they're extremely cheap. But that's all very typical, because don't try and find any reason why a banking share or a mining share will go up today. You're not going to find a reason. You know, you'll be swamped in bad news, and that's why they've been beaten up, is because there is bad news around. But it doesn't mean that can't change. Now, I mean, if I always get accused of being too optimistic, and possibly I am, but, you know, if I was too negative, I would have been so wrong, because we're still here. You know, South Africa's still here. It hasn't imploded. You know, we've survived so many crises as perceived by the pessimists, and we're still here, you know, so maybe being mildly optimistic is not the worst sort of attitude to have. But if I had to be optimistic about South Africa and look 2 or 3 years out and paint a scenario, Eskom will be a thing of the past, well, more correctly, load shedding will be a thing of the past in 2 or 3 years' time. The private sector is coming on with such generation capacity. Eskom's got a serious problem in that essentially their customer base is going to be non-paying customers. But as far as power delivery is concerned, 2 to 3 years' time, this load shedding thing is a thing of the past. And at the moment, we haven't had load shedding for about 2 weeks, except if you're in Kaya Sands, which has it every day as the power supply breaks down. We had no electricity today at all. And the previous 3 working days, we had about 3 to 4 hours no electricity.
But that's a localized substation. Yeah, that's a localized substation issue, isn't it?
Correct. Yeah. But it just happens all the time. But that's beside the point.
Right.
So Eskom will be, now, load shedding will be a thing of the past in 2 or 3 years' time in South Africa. Transnet and the logistic challenges. Transnet is effectively being privatized. 2 or 3 years' time, that might not be enough time to sort everything out, but tremendous strides will be made in getting rid of that bottleneck. Of course, all the other government inefficiencies, getting your license, changing ownership of a business, changing ownership of a property, all of that will probably be the same. You know, no better or no worse or no less inefficient as what it is now. And hopefully, most importantly of all, we'll have a positive commodity cycle. So we could go back to the conditions that prevailed 2001 through to 2004, never to the same extent, because those were unusually good for us. But we could go back to that same type of scenario with a stronger rand, the economy growing not at 0.8%, growing at maybe 1.5 to 2.5%. Inflation with the stronger rand, inflation's totally under control. and you'll get lower interest rates that are coming, and people can take on more debt and spend more money, and housing prices will go up. So, you know, you can actually paint a reasonably good outlook for South Africa in comparison to where we are today. I'm not painting a good outlook, I'm just saying better.
Relatively.
And quite a bit better than where we are today.
Well, let's hope so, Wayne.
But of course, when things are negative,
yeah.
When things are negative, people just don't want to even, it'll be like this forever. Same as when things are positive, it'll also be like that forever.
What we must do in the next few weeks in the lead up to this event is speak about the election and polling, and you'll be my eyes and ears on this one when it comes to who's which newspaper or which polling company is
yes.
predicting below 40% for the ANC or in the mid-40s or whatever it is. But it's a very, very tense time, I would have thought. And again, that's a localised influence on the bond market.
Look, local people, man, you know, we have one extremely good attribute in South Africa.
Which is?
Is that generally, I mean, maybe there's one or two exceptions like myself, but generally we're a happy country with good people that can take a lot of abuse without sort of like really throwing your toys out of the cot. And, you know, so the election's coming, so what, you know? It's not going to be riots and violence and killings, and at least you sincerely hope not.
No.
But just on elections, you'll get all of these wild polls. The EFF, let me give you my prediction.
Go on.
The EFF will get 10, 11, 12%. They're not going to double their votes. They've already got their power base, though, their power base. And they're actually finding it extremely difficult to grow that power base, despite all the noise they make in the public space. MK Party, I mean, it's brand new. Everyone's going that they're going to be bigger than the EFF. Man, I
2-3%
cannot
maybe.
See it. So that's my view. 2-4%. That's my view.
Yes.
Then all this multitude of smaller parties will effectively not even gather a vote. I mean, it's going to be so minuscule. People are relatively reluctant to change allegiances. You know, and what can a small party do with a minimal number of seats? So, you know, maybe in total, all and there's something, I mean, I heard a massive figure yesterday. My memory is quite poor. Are there 72 parties? If you add the provincial and the national and all together in one pot, it's double what it was the last election.
Well, that's healthy.
It's something, yeah, it's a healthy democracy. But all of these, and I'm looking at all the posters, I'm in my car now, I'm looking at all the posters up on the polls, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think these new smaller parties will get a very, very small percentage of the vote. The ANC will lose votes, there's no doubt about that. But they will probably go just below 50, so that's my view there. The DA, unfortunately, the DA, it just seems impossible for the DA to do the right thing to attract the majority of citizens of South Africa.
Yeah,
they're just not able to do the right thing.
They're confined to the Cape, let's face it.
They seem to get rid of all the credible black leaders that they ever get in. They seem to disappear quite quickly. Over half of the people in senior positions in the DA have got double-barreled surnames. You know.
What's his name? Jordan Hill Lewis or something?
I cannot see them.
I can't remember what his name
is. There's quite a few of them, actually.
Yeah.
Gordon Hill Lewis is one of them.
Yeah.
And it's not as though it's a terrible party and they're doing a terrible job and they've got terrible policies. It's actually a good party doing a good job and they've got good policies. They're just not ever going to attract the black vote the way they have structured themselves and the way they appear in public and all the people in their higher places and all of that. It's just not happening, unfortunately.
And if you're just on the final political note, because we will speak about it in greater detail, the polls all start to concur and the ANC is around 40% or less, then there might be some wobbles in the market. But the voting is very simple in most countries. My father was a blue-collar worker. He voted Labour because his father voted Labour and his grandfather voted Labour. Now, therefore, my father voted Labour, but But then the generation started to think a bit, you know, I myself and my brothers and sisters, we thought, well, no, just because you voted for Labour, for Harold Wilson, Dad, we're not going to vote for them. Maybe that will start to happen with the ANC, because at the moment, if you don't vote ANC, then you're a traitor.
Yes. Yes, but I mean, understand, if we examine the political parties, and I'm looking at our president on a poster here giving me the eyeball, saying, let's do more together.
Oh, yeah.
But there's a huge legacy with the freedom movement. It's hard to unshake that legacy. No matter who's in charge, it's hard to unshake that legacy. You don't unshake that in 30 years. Eh? You just don't. You know, when push comes to shove and a person actually stands in the voting booth with a pen, it's hard to shake that legacy. Now, I mean, you can find 1,000 things to fault the government on, maybe 10,000 things to fault the government on. But the one thing the new administration has done is they haven't put them in jail yet, but they've got rid of the, not all, but
the
they've
thieves.
Got rid of the overwhelming majority of the thieves. Are not in positions of power.
Good.
And I stress, not all of them, and they haven't prosecuted virtually none of them yet, and virtually none of them sit in jail yet. So let's just put that aside. And they did stop state capture.
Yeah. You've made that point, you know, well, so on a number of occasions, but you're quite right.
There's credit to the current management of the ANC.
Very good.
I mean, they still can't organize anything seems competently. And let's take one step back now and talk about life in South Africa. Now, you hanging out in the Nederland now.
Yes, sir.
But life in South Africa is lekker. It's lekker if three things are sorted out. If you can sort out three things, life in South Africa is lekker. Number one, if you've got a decent job.
Yeah.
Okay. Number two is you organize and you fix up your own personal security.
So and don't rely on the police, in other words.
You got to have ADT and armed response and a burglar alarm and an electric fence and barbed wire and blah, 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 and a tracker in your car and all of these things. You've got to sort out your own security. And then the third one is you have got to try your very best, your absolute best, never to interact with the government on anything, whether it's administration or life. You have got to, because the moment you touch the government, you want to pull your hair out because it's so frustrating. It takes so long. There's such incompetence. So if you can try and minimize touching the government, interacting with the government, you know, you've got to get your licenses done, but you can get that done online now. But you've got to get your passport renewed, or you've got to do, because whenever you touch the government, you want to pull your hair out. So those are the three things. And if you are fortunate enough to manage those three things, life here is lekker. Okay, you got to dodge the taxis and the odd pothole you got to dodge. But life's lekker here. We live a very good life if you can sort those three things out.
Yes, people like yourself who have worked hard over the years and worked cleverly as well as hard, then of course it's going to be good. You've got swimming pools, you've got motor cars, and you go on trips quite often, and you eat good food. Yeah. On which subject, rather? I will be going down after my last podcast in about an hour's time, and I will be taking taking the wraps off a pork belly that I have marinated in all sorts of Korean spices. Ooh. and sauces and that sort of thing. And I've got a pot of cauliflower rice. Now, I'm trying to get this situation where if I was in your office, in your warehouse, your car warehouse, and in your office, and there's a pole between almost next to the wall, and if you could walk between the wall and the pole, then your tummy's not too big. So, yeah,
then you're okay.
Then you're fine.
Then you pass.
Yes, exactly.
So that's the test, the beginning of each year.
Precisely. Never mind that
pole and the wall.
No, yeah. I'm much more frequent now. I'm becoming obsessed with the fact that it's not easy to lose weight when you get to a certain age in your life, which is unfair. Why should young people have a great metabolism and burn up all the carbohydrates? So what I've got cauliflower rice, Wayne. I've got a bowl of cauliflower rice.
I've had it. It's quite lekker.
It's delicious. I'm gonna zhuzh it up a little bit with a couple of little chopped peppers and chilies and things like that, and a few herbs.
No, I must say I like cauliflower. It's the one vegetable that I do actually like. Normally with a cheese sauce on it, but I actually like cauliflower.
Yeah, it's good. Well, I'm going to spice it up tonight with my Korean pork belly. Any stories for me?
Oh, no, I must say pork belly, if you get that thing right and it's nice and crispy, it's delicious. Yes, I have got a story.
Go on.
Went out on Saturday night to the first proper duck restaurant that I have found in Johannesburg since Le Canard, that was Wendy Applebaum's restaurant, closed down.
I know.
Donkeys years ago.
Crikey, Wayne, you're bringing back memories now. I just want to just tell you why, because the Applebaums were responsible for bringing Classic FM to South Africa, and I was the host of Classic Business Day, the business show, and they like me, so I would go once a week at least to Le Canard and sit down and get the royal treatment. I'd pay my bill, of course, but the steak tartare and the duck there was just something to behold.
Now, look, they used to do that duck thigh. Oh, they got that balance exactly right between crispiness and crispiness with the fat on the outside and very, very juicy meat, not dry meat.
Ooh.
Well, this other duck restaurant I went to, it's
where?
It's near Monte Cassino.
Right.
Some shopping center near Monte Cassino. Pine Slopes, that's it. Pine Slope Shopping Center, they served good duck. And I went there, and for starters, I had prawn bisque, which was just absolutely delicious. Different to other ones that I've had, because they added quite a bit of chopped up onions in there. And all the other prawn bisques I've had didn't have the chopped up onions, but it was absolutely delicious. And then main course just was unbelievably good. I had duck and cherry pie, and it was fantastic. You know those big cherries you get, the name starts with an M. I can't remember.
Maraschino, no?
Maraschino, that's it.
Yeah.
Is it? I'm sure it's maraschino.
Maraschinos are the ones that have been soaked in, you get them in a jar, and they're sugary. But anyway, big cherries, right.
Yeah. Big succulent cherries in this duck and cherry pie with the crispiest crust, and a big helping as well with some nice sauce to put on it. Wow, it was delicious.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, we are going back there in the not too distant future, because I'm still going to try the duck la orange, have the orange duck, and they've got French onion brown soup as a starter as well.
If that
French onion soup is well done, that is of the most delicious meals you can ever have.
I know. You get those beautiful brown onions on the top. You don't use the sweet onions, you use the brown onions on the top with the cheese. And I think they use Gruyere. And they've got
Gruyere,
but anyway, gosh. Oh, now I'm hungry again. All right, Wayne.
The little croutons.
Oh, croutons.
I've got the little croutons with my duck and cherry pie as well to put in with the sauce. And I must say, it was totally and utterly delicious. And, you know, obviously the duck and cherry was good, but the pastry on that pie was so crisp. And they did a superb job. And then the other people I went with, one had a roast lamb pie. And she said it was like having a roast lamb meal all in one, because it had peas in it. And so absolute top marks to that restaurant.
Okay, well, I'm going to look it up online near Monte Cassino and have a look at their website.
It's in the Pine Slopes Shopping Centre,
Pine Slopes, okay. Jolly good. All right, Wayne, thank you very much for your insight and making and whetting my appetite. Wayne McCurry is a portfolio manager at FNB Wealth and Investment in Johannesburg. And that was Wayne on Wednesday. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.